Welcome to the Issue Is podcast. This week, the California recall race really heating up. Governor Newsom hitting the campaign trail. Scandals potentially involving Larry Elder. Big pushback from him. Republicans piling on Larry Elder. A lot to get into. We've got the main newsmaker at the center of this entire thing, Governor Gavin Newsom, one-on-one with us this week. And later we discuss that interview, the Elder comments, and a whole lot more with our panel this week. Dan Schnur from USC and Berkeley and Pepperdine. Gustavo Arellano of the LA Times and the LA Times podcast. And also Susan Shelley from the Orange County Register, columnist, several other papers as well that endorsed Larry Elder this week. But let's begin with Governor Newsom. We spoke to him at a Mexican restaurant in El Sereno, where he was campaigning, his first day of campaigning in Southern California, urging people to vote no on the recall. Backstage, here's what he had to say.
Governor, welcome back to The Issue Is.
Good to be here.
Good to see you.
Good to be back.
So the state of the recall race, how do you see it right now? How do you see this race?
Well, we turn out our vote, we're going to win overwhelmingly. We just have to remind people the imperative of the vote no on the question that is in front of them. And I say in front of them because this is an all mail-in ballot. It's very different. It's an off year, off month. It happens on September 14th, but at the end of the day, the election day is every single day between now and September 14th. It's all about turnout.
And we have seen, though, the Republicans seem really fired up, Democrats not as much.
Yeah.
What is the strategy? What does the next few weeks look like?
Well, it's interesting. I mean, there's so many networks 24/7 promoting this recall, half for months, and people to see, and Democrats in many respects, you know, we see a big blue state. We see sort of dominance in terms of the party's representation in seats across state. So we just are assuming things are safe, but you can't assume anything. And so we're trying to remind people of what's at stake, compare and contrast what's on the other side and the consequences, and remind folks of the obvious, that it's polls don't vote, people vote, meaning the notion of registered voters feeling pretty confident that we'll win versus likely voters, mostly Republicans, that will ultimately determine this. We have to turn that paradigm around.
And you say that Larry Elder is the clear favorite on the other side.
Yeah.
So I think there are a lot of people that have asked me, how much can a governor really do in a year with a Democratic supermajority? What's the answer to that?
I mean, you can lie down and veto everything coming out of the legislature. You can veto everything that comes from the legislature.
But there's a veto-proof majority,
well,
right?
Well, there is and there isn't. A lot of things are stubborn. There's a lot of diversity even within the Democratic caucus. At the end of the day, you could start to vandalize all the executive orders. You can eliminate the masking requirement for public schools. You can eliminate the vaccine requirements for public health care workers. So many of the things that I signed through executive order can be done overnight. You can appoint judges without any oversight and consideration. That's going to have an impact for years and years and years. If there's a vacancy, and you've seen many vacancies, Secretary of State, U.S. Senator, you've seen an Attorney General, you appoint County Board of Supervisors. I appoint half a dozen. You able to appoint people that will permanently have that opportunity to represent. So it is a profound consequence. And also you have the bully pulpit of the fifth largest economy in the world. And you have a midterm election coming up with another California who wants to take out Nancy Pelosi. Consequences are pretty extraordinary.
So in terms of sort of where we go from here, the LA Times has this op-ed that says that it would be a disaster if you were recalled. But they also said it would be cowardly not to vote on question number two. They make the point that there's a big difference between Larry Elder and Kevin Faulkner.
I don't know.
You don't think so?
I don't know.
You don't think there's a difference between Larry Elder and Kevin Faulkner?
I don't know. You have to ask them. I mean, they seem to align on the masking. They seem to align on the vaccine verification. They align in terms of their support of Donald Trump. So I don't honestly know. I mean, look at where they are on the critical issue of this Delta variant and keeping people healthy and keeping people safe as it relates to this virus. They are both promoting exact same position, walking off a COVID cliff and following the Ron DeSantis and the Texas model. So I would suggest they're much more similar than they appear.
But is there something, though, of giving up your vote, giving up your say in that, and then a real small minority of voters, you're essentially letting the Republicans pick the next governor of California?
No, I mean, look, this thing, up or down, we could reject. You don't have to worry about the second question. I mean, the clarity of this is pretty simple. You vote no, we don't have to even worry about the second question. Just vote no. And then next year, we can have at it and we can go back and forth with 40, 50, 60, 70 candidates in a traditional election. But they want to shortchange that. All these folks that put their name on this ballot, know they're going to have a hard time winning next year when it's done traditionally and appropriately. So they have to take advantage of the perversion of our recall laws that are among the easiest in the country to get on.
This isn't just Republicans that supported this recall. There are Democrats that signed it as well, overwhelmingly Republicans, but there are Democrats, there are independents that are frustrated by what's happened in this state that are considering voting for this recall right now. Do you understand why they're frustrated? And what's your message to them?
The last year and a half, we've all been frustrated. All tremendous fear, anxiety, all of us have been faced with across the country. There's not a state, and no one in positions of influence or leadership is not struggling with everybody's anxieties. And you have to be empathetic in that respect. But also you have to be sort of mindful that there's a reason the RNC is behind this, and Newt Gingrich is behind this, and folks like Devin Nunes are behind this. There's a reason the RNC wrote a check to help get this on the ballot, and there's a reason that it was initiated. And I think this is incredibly important. Read the petition. Yeah. Read the list of grievances. And it starts with sort of a condemnation of immigration and our diversity. And I just hope folks pause and really reflect on what this is really about. At the same time, look, I deeply understand the difficulty and challenges we've been through as a state. But boy, we are turning the state around, outperforming across the spectrum, across the economic and health spectrum compared to other states, and the best is yet to come.
Well, and let's just paint a real clear picture of that. So the next year, because that's all this is going to be, basically, what does that look like with you? What's the agenda for the next year with you as compared to with one of the others?
We just put together a comprehensive, detailed strategy, first in state's history, to deal with the issue that's probably the most frustrating and vexing issue of our times, and that's homelessness. A $12 billion plan, $3 billion for new mental health housing for conservatorships, and to place people that are severely mentally ill, get them off the streets, an encampment strategy to address all these encampments. We haven't been shy. A $3.75 billion commitment on affordable housing, a housing agenda likes of which we've never had, cleaning up our streets. We're transforming our public education system, and we are combating climate change, leading the nation in terms of our low carbon strategy. So I think a lot is at stake. All of that gets set back, right, quite literally, in many cases, reversed if we don't turn out and vote no on the recall.
And so your day job, because before you haven't campaigned for this, now you're starting to campaign. You're doing this in the middle of the pandemic and in the middle of some of the worst wildfires in the history of the state. How do you balance the two going forward?
It's just life's an and, not an or. Tyranny of or, genius of and. My point is, you know, you do this, and you show up in Greenville and address the issues of the Dixie Fire. You pre-position assets, knowing that we got a heat dome over the next few weeks. You address the issues day in and day out of trying to implement so many of the proposals that we just got passed by the legislature in terms of the homeless efforts, in terms of our housing agenda. At the same time, raising resources, money, awareness, and focusing on the task at hand, which is 30 days out now.
Bottom line message to folks now that are concerned about all of this?
Well, it's a zero-sum game. I mean, you can have someone in office, you can wake up, and you can dream of regretting in profound and consequential ways. It'll be felt all across the country, not just here in California. And it's part and parcel of a narrative we've seen in this country where people deny election outcomes. They try to disrupt those in positions by getting in recalls, great measure mechanism in which they could be disruptive. And people continue down a path of denialism about science, and facts, and evidence. Yeah. And that's on this ballot. I mean, all of that. Climate science is on the ballot. Public health and public safety is on the ballot. Our public education in this state and keeping our kids safely back in school, that's on the ballot. All of them want to eliminate the mask wearing requirement and vaccine verifications. It's very consequential.
Do you think there are any legitimate grievances that people have? And are there any lessons maybe you've learned from the last year, maybe things that didn't go so well that you want to do differently now going forward?
The state of California outperformed Texas and Florida, Indiana, and the United States in terms of health outcomes and economic outcomes. California has actually led. We're the first of the stay-at-home order, first with these new requirements as it relates to vaccine verification. We continue to lean in. We're doing substantially better than other parts of the country right now, including one of the top vaccinated rates, vaccine rates in the country. Look, in hindsight, all of us, there's no playbook for any governor, not one in this country. Every single person in position of leadership, business leaders, parents, all of us, I imagine, could go back and say, how would I approach things if we knew now, or then rather, what we know now. And so it's always difficult to assess that, but humility, always, no one's ideological here. And I recognize what everyone recognized, all those pre-existing conditions. Don't think for a second. I mean, they're just 2.5 years. We just got with the last year and a half, got a little sidetracked in terms of the fundamental agenda of addressing affordability and dealing with homelessness and what's happening on the streets. And also addressing some of the crime issues in the state, which I'm committed to and resolved to do. And we have strategies, and we are not walking away from responsibility in that space either.
And we saw you fired up in one of the recent interviews that got a lot of attention. I know this last year has been so incredibly taxing for you personally, every single day, the pressure of the pandemic and everything. Stressful for everybody all around the state, but especially for you with the pressure of all this. Is it frustrating, though, after doing all of that work every day to then have to face this?
I mean, nothing is enjoyable about facing this recall, but I don't know if there's anything I could have done to avoid it at the end of the day. Again, this predates the damn pandemic. These guys are coming. This is the sixth effort. And we're just at a moment in American history with the easiest recall ballot to get on in America, where it just takes a few million dollars and a little intentionality to get it done. So look, yeah, I got four kids. I mean, the stress I have is replicated by millions of other families with kids. And that's the hardest part. And they're young. They're all of them under the age of 11. You know, the youngest just turned 5. And, you know, dealing with family and the responsibilities and dealing with pandemic, I have small businesses myself. You know, that's how I got into politics as a small business owner. All of this across the spectrum. And, you know, end of the day, no one cares about, I know what people think about, I'm not naive. Yeah. We love to hate politicians. Yeah. We're just things. No one has to worry about my feelings. My job is to worry about your feelings. And 40 million Californians. And you know what? I care about all 40 million. I care about the people that signed the petition. I care about Republicans, not just Democrats. I care about people living in rural California. I care about people that go to church. I care about people that believe in their right to bear arms. I believe that people have the ability to live together across their differences. I love this state. I love what it represents. I love our values. And I'm going to fight like hell to protect them. And that's why I want people to vote no on this recall.
Governor Gavin Newsom, thank you for the time.
Thank
Appreciate
you.
It. Always
Appreciate
great
it.
To see you.
Thank you
so much.
Our thanks to the governor of California. Now, let's talk about where we go from here. We got news this week that Kamala Harris is going to be coming to the Bay Area next Friday to campaign with Governor Newsom. And a lot going on for him and a lot going on with Larry Elder. With us this week is Dan Schnur from USC, UC Berkeley, also had worked with Pete Wilson and worked on kind of Republican, Democratic, independent spaces as well. Gustavo Arellano from the LA Times, the Times podcast, who wrote about the Latino issue for Governor Newsom this week. And Susan Shelley, part of the editorial group for the Southern California News Group, they endorsed Larry Elder this week. She interviewed him, was a part of that process as well. Very different perspectives, a really interesting conversation. I hope you enjoy it as much as I did. Here they are. Welcome back to The Issue Is, all of you. Dan, let's start with you. How would you assess the state of the recall race and what you just heard from Governor Newsom?
At this point, Alex, the state of the recall race is tracking, as it has been for a year now, with the state of COVID. The recall was flailing early on. And after the governor had his ill-fated dinner at the French Laundry restaurant last winter, and after the most severe shutdowns we had at the end of the year in early 2021, that's when the recall really gathered steam. This spring, when it looked like the world was opening up again, Newsom began to look stronger too. And now, thanks to the Delta variant, now that we're heading back into more challenging circumstances, so is Gavin Newsom. And he has an electorate that largely is on his side, but it's pretty unhappy about the pandemic. It's pretty unhappy about the wildfires. It may not be all that motivated to vote when the time comes.
And Gustavo, recent polls suggest the governor is struggling to win over Latinos most of all. Why do you think that is? And what can he do to change that?
Latinos have been, of course, disproportionately affected by the pandemic, and there is that fatigue. And there's also, let's admit, there's an increasing number of Latinos who are finally fed up with the Democratic Party, who even though they've given them all these programs ostensibly They are tired of hearing the Republicans are evil, the Republicans are out to get you. At this point, with we've already seen a once-in-a-century pandemic, you're seeing more and more Latinos. The polls show that a majority of Latinos right now are for recalling Davis. They're saying, you know what? We've had enough of Davis. Freudian slip there, of Newsom. They're saying, we've seen enough of Newsom. Maybe we don't necessarily like any candidate on the Republican side, anyone who's running against Newsom, but we want to send a message to Newsom, like, you got to pay attention. If Newsom wants him, he literally has to go to every single Latino, or at least get his big army of Latinos to go out there and say no. I mean, he needs to offer Latinos hope. He cannot offer them doom and gloom. We've already seen doom and gloom, and we don't like doom and gloom. Give Latinos hope.
And you don't think there's enough hope in the message right now?
Not right now. As I wrote in my column, I remember you had a Newsom doing, you know, the California comeback. California roars back. He dropped that after like a month. And especially now with Larry Elder, who we're going to talk about later, but now he's saying like Larry Elder is basically Trump. Larry Elder will come for your children. And by the way, Larry Elder probably will, but he is going to be pushing this again and again. And I'm sorry, after a while, we've been hearing this ever since Dan's old boss, Pete Wilson, back in 1994. We've been hearing the Republicans are going to come after us. It worked for a good generation to make Latinos vote Democrat, but people are getting tired of it, especially because 25 years later, okay, going against Republicans, has that made life for Latinos better in California because of the pandemic? Not really.
And Susan, there are a lot more Democrats in California, twice as many Democratic voters, but polls show that Republicans way more fired up about the recall. How are you feeling about the chances to actually pull this off?
Well, I don't know more than the pollsters do, but the governor certainly looks nervous, and it certainly appears that this is going to be a nail biter on election night. But it's not just Republicans. It's also that he signed AB 5, which made freelancing illegal in California. It's a crime to hire independent contractors. A lot of Democrats were affected by that. A lot of freelancers in the entertainment industry affected by that and not happy. It's all the angry parents who don't like the way he handled the schools and the deferring to the unions about school reopening decisions. A lot of angry people, not just Republicans.
Dan, I know the governor has been excited about the possibility of Kamala Harris and Joe Biden coming basically to save the day. Kamala Harris is coming on Friday. I wish we could do a whole show about Afghanistan. Unfortunately, this is just focused on California politics. But what sort of impact does Kamala Harris's visit make, and does the Afghanistan situation make it less of an impact?
Well, I don't know how much of an impact Harris is going to have. I think what the Newsom campaign realized early on is, in order to motivate the Democratic base to turn out, there's not much they can tell them about Newsom's record that's going to get progressive Democrats that excited. So there's two alternatives when you have to turn out your base if your base isn't that excited about your candidate. One alternative, as you just mentioned, Alex, is to nationalize the election and essentially say to Democrats, hey, you might not love Newsom, but there's much bigger national stakes involved here. That's why Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren and soon Harris and Biden will be campaigning for Newsom. The other way of doing it is Gustavo mentioned. If you can't get people excited about your own candidate, you frighten them about the other side. And if Larry Elder did not exist, Gavin Newsom would have had to invent him, because what Newsom's message has now become at this point is essentially, you may not love me, but do you really want any of these people, especially that guy Elder, to replace me? And that perhaps may have the ability to motivate Democrats in a way that talking about Newsom and his own record and achievements is not doing.
Susan, do you think that Joe Biden still ends up coming here with everything else that's going on?
No, I think that ship has sailed with the catastrophe in Afghanistan. I think his endorsement would not be helpful, and it wouldn't look good for him at this time to be campaigning in California. I think he probably will not come.
And Gustavo, an interesting question is, what do we do about question two on the ballot, even for Democrats or people like you that don't want there to be a recall? You know, Governor Newsom saying to me, well, don't even worry about it, don't think about it, saying that he doesn't see a difference between Larry Elder and Kevin Faulkner. What do you say about that?
If the polls go as they're going, which is there's going to be a recall of Newsom, the Democrats are going to have to realize this really quick. And you're going to see something that hasn't happened in California politics since the 1930s. That was when Upton Sinclair, who we all remember now as the author of The Jungle, but actually ran for governor of California as a socialist and won the Democratic Party ticket. And all the Democratic establishment went and started supporting the Republican governor. And even though they hated the candidate, who was Frank Merriam, even though they did not like Republicans, they're like, there is no way on earth we're going to allow a socialist. So that would be hilarious to see the Democrats saying, okay, we know our guy's toast, but we didn't put any Democrat. What, you go for that TikTok YouTube personality whose name I forget right now? Or do you go for someone who's viable and tell every single Democrat, okay, like, we got to run for this. Like, you want to talk about voting for someone you don't like? This is the time, because otherwise we're going to have Larry Elder and we're doomed.
By the way, his name is Kevin Paffraff.
I'm old, so I don't know that, like you, Alex, sorry.
As he's known. Dan, to wrap up with you, do you think that that's a mistake, the Democratic strategy when it comes to question two?
It's a mistake on strategy, and more important than that, it's a mistake in terms of democracy, Alex. Reasonable people can disagree on whether Newsom should be recalled from office or not, but for the governor to say, don't even bother to vote for my potential replacement, is an abdication of leadership. He's essentially saying, if I can't keep my job, I don't care what happens at the state of California. That's unfortunate. I hope he changes his mind between now and September 14th in order to give his supporters some guidance and direction for what life might be like if he is recalled.
My experience with Larry Elder is that he lacks impulse control and he's dangerous.
Larry Elder responding to his ex-fiance claiming he waved a gun at her while high. He says, quote, I've never brandished a gun at anyone. I grew up in South Central. I know exactly how destructive this type of behavior is. It's not me, and everyone who knows me knows it's not me. These are salacious allegations. More with our panel, Dan Schnur of USC, Gustavo Arellano of the LA Times, and Susan Shelley of the Orange County Register. Larry Elder also coming under fire for a column that he wrote in 2000 in Capitalism magazine. We want to put it up on the screen. He wrote, quote, women know less about men than men about political issues, economics, and current events. He said that a study at the Annenberg School at the University of Pennsylvania confirmed women's lack of knowledge of the issues. Here's what former San Diego Mayor Kevin Faulkner told me about that by phone this week.
That's bull, and we ought to call it that.
And you also said it's bull.
I did, because it is. He doesn't want to defend this. It's indefensible.
Faulkner making that point at a debate as well. Susan Shelley, your board endorsed Elder. You interviewed him for that endorsement. Why are you backing him, and does this change your view of him at all?
Well, first, let me say that he was commenting on a survey of women and what they knew about the issues in terms of elections, in terms of campaigns, not individual women, but women as a voting bloc. And he was commenting on a study that said that. So I think that that's not really a fair charge against him. And what I perceived was no sexism at all from him. I certainly did not perceive that he did not respect the opinion of women or thought that women had less knowledge of current events. That was certainly not my impression on our call. I detected no trace of sexism. And the reason that we endorsed him is we felt that he would use the bully pulpit very effectively in a one-year term to elevate some of the issues and some of the solutions to problems in California.
Gustavo, what do you make of all of this? Does it hurt him?
Oh, no. The elder dodos are going to be following him no matter what he does. And it's funny because we should have been paying attention to the snore of South Central instead of John and Ken. I've been listening to talk radio in Southern California, God, for 15 years. I never bothered with Larry, because he just was boring to me. He was literally the audio version of a wagging finger. So as the campaign's going to come up, you're going to see even more stuff that's tone deaf, more stuff that's whatever. People are not going to pay, his fans are not going to pay attention. At the end, they don't even care so much about Larry as they care about removing Gavin Newsom. And the Newsom campaign, they're going to dredge up even more stuff. They're going to dredge up more things that Larry said or more beliefs. Like, you know, one quick tweet, he said that Latinos have prejudice against black folks, but that black folks don't have any negative stereotypes about Latinos. And the same thing, he cited a study. Okay, so there's many studies out there in the world. Does you citing that particular study, what does it say about you, you know? And so, but it matters nothing. It mattered nothing at all. Frankly, the more bad things you say about Larry, the more his fans are going to love him.
Well, and Dan, that is kind of what happened with Donald Trump, right? Because every time that he was attacked by the media or by his opponents, he made it saying, they're attacking you because they're trying to stop me. In reality, they're trying to stop you. And it seems like Larry Elder is taking the same approach.
Elder is taking the same approach. You're exactly right, Alex. But the bar is a lot lower for Elder in a recall election. This isn't as much politics as it is arithmetic. In a regular election, you need 51% of the vote to win. In order to win the second question on the recall ballot, you probably only need about 20 or 25%. And that's a very devoted core, a very loyal supporters to Elder. So I don't think this hurts him very much at all. He is still the odds-on favorite to win on the second question. But I would suggest to you also that the only person who's happier about Elder's success than Elder is Newsom, because the stronger Elder gets as the potential replacement for Newsom on the second question, the better Newsom's odds get to beat the recall on the first question. So the more Elder dominates the news, as he has over the past several days, it's good for Elder. It's even better for Newsom.
But a potential counter to that, Susan, is that Larry Elder also is exciting the Republican base and bringing people together in a way that somebody like Kevin Faulkner has not demonstrated an ability to do. What do you make, Susan, of Kevin Faulkner's strategy to now go after Elder, the Republican frontrunner, in such an aggressive way, saying he's basically BS?
Well, he's someone whose plans have been upended by the entrance of Larry Elder into the race. Elder raised more money, got more support, got more delegate signatures toward an endorsement. The Republican Party didn't make an endorsement. That in itself was a repudiation of Kevin Faulkner, who had been counting on it. There's no question that the 2022 race has started. This is the Republican primary for 2022. And I think Kevin Faulkner is hoping to clear the field and try again.
Gustavo, do you have a favorite for question two? I know you're going to vote on it. Who do you like?
I like whoever's not going to be Larry Elder. Let's put it that way. Maybe it's that, again, I already forgot his name, Alex, the YouTube personality. Maybe it's him. Maybe it's Kevin Faulkner. If there's a chance that Kevin can catch Larry, and again, going back to my Upton Sinclair scenario, then I would vote for Kevin. But I would hope at that point that Democrats, even Latinos, get in their mind that this recall is a farce. Newsom is no saint, not even close. But Newsom is less of a saint than this recall is a farce, if that makes any sense whatsoever. Anyways, vote no on the recall.
And by the way, you've got Kevin Paffrath, the YouTube guy, Kevin Kiley, the assemblyman, and Kevin Faulkner, the former mayor of San Diego.
Oh, God, this is a Kevin's election. Yeah, no more Kevins.
You could just vote for a Kevin, and somehow it worked out. All right, our thanks to our panel. You guys are all great. I wish we could talk to you all day. Hope to see you all again soon.
Our thanks to all of them. Next week, a special debate between Tommy Lahren on the right and Ethan Bierman on the left. Also, maybe, let's hope, who knows, Vice President Kamala Harris. We'll see what happens there. In the meantime, have a great week, and don't forget to vote. I'm Alex Michelson. Thanks so much.